Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com. I am your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined today by two people whose names are going to confuse me a lot on this podcast. First up, it's John Godis. How's it going, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. And also joined by your co-host on HQ Overtime, the show that you guys did excellently throughout the playoffs, John Turco. How's it going, man?
Hello, ballers and Raptonians.
Yeah.
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, man. Nice to have you on the show for the first time. You've not been on the headquarters in your time with the site, so excited for your debut.
I'm still a virgin.
Oh, man. This podcast is probably going to be sad, but also happy at some points, I'm sure. We'll get into some stuff all over the place. The Raptors, of course, lost in Game 4 to the Cavs horribly. By 35 points, and all the questions are being asked today. There's Dwayne Casey sort of reports coming out. There is, you know, talk about DeMar DeRozan and his trade value or trade status, whatever the hell. There's no shortage of stuff for us to get sad about and talk about on today's show, so we'll get into all that. We got a million listener questions as well, some very good ones, too. The sadness really brings out the good questions. And then we're going to wrap things up with the round of that random Raptors game, which should be lovely. So we'll take a quick break, come back to the other side, and get things going here on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with John Godis and John Turco. Let's, I guess, start with a quick touch on Game 4. You know, this will be dated pretty quickly, but it was bad. The Raptors came out with a new starting lineup, their second in two games. Serge Ibaka and Pascal Siakam starting in the front court, if I'm not mistaken. No, it was Serge Ibaka and OG Anunoby in the front court with CJ Miles. I'm an idiot. I wanted Pascal Siakam to start, but that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We can get into all that stuff as well. But new starting five didn't work out particularly well. All of them enormous minuses. The first half was not like the worst for, you know, 22 minutes. And then the last 2 minutes, Bebe came in and kind of passed the season away and jumped into Kevin Love the season away, whatever the hell you want to call it. It wasn't pretty the way it all came to an end in that second quarter. And then the third and fourth quarters, they were just kind of, I think, accepting of their impending doom, which honestly can't really blame them for. Godis, start with you. What happened in Game 4? Why was it so bad?
Well, it was just bad, period. I mean, I can't prescribe like a solution. I think that the Raptors broke at some point during those three tips in Game 1 and just never really recovered. Like in the first half of Game 1, they were playing their stuff. They were right there. They were defending pretty well. They looked like a team that was confident it could win. And then everything after that point where they kind of blew up and lost the game in Game 1, it was just like a mad scramble of no plan, of no kind of adjustments happening fast enough, and the result was what we saw in Game 4. I think they were just broken beyond measure, and Bebe came in, and it was a 20-point game 3 minutes into the third quarter, and after that point, I think they were just kind of done. Like, DeMar DeRozan had the flagrant 2, got ejected from the game, and that's just like a sure sign. It shouldn't have been a flagrant 2, but it was still a frustration foul where you kind of saw, like, oh, okay, like, they've checked out now. Yeah. And that was Game 4.
You know what? I can't really blame them for checking out in the second half, like I said. I mean, like, you play two really close games. One ends on a bunch of shitty tip-ins that don't go in, and then a missed open three where the process works perfectly fine, and then it's a miss. And then Game 3, the stupid buzzer beater by LeBron, that just stupid, beautiful, ridiculous, amazing shot that, like, what are you supposed to do about it? They've defended it not perfectly well, but at the same time, that was the shot he ended up taking, and like, if that's the shot a guy's going to take, I think you're probably pretty happy with it. So, I don't know. I can understand being deflated in Game 4. I wasn't expecting much from Game 4. It is weird, though, that like the way it kind of finished maybe sours the feeling of the entire series. Like, it wasn't amazing by any means. Like, they were down 3-0, whatever. It could have been 2-1, though, and like those little margins, obviously, like, they didn't do a very good job of filling those in, but like, I think you could feel a lot better after three games than you could after Game 4. John Turco, like, does your opinion of how this series went change because Game 4 was such a disaster, or are you kind of looking at it as, like, the same thing?
Yeah, I look at it as the same You mentioned about when Baby came in and it was just kind of done from there. That was my turning point. When you put in Nogueira, who hasn't played in the whole series, and he comes in and he plays like 2 terrible minutes, and I think it was like 1 minute 53 seconds that he was on the court, the Cavs went on a 10-0 run, which made a 5-point game into a 15-point game. That's when I was, you know, if it wasn't for being a professional blogger, I kind of would have just been like, yeah, I'm done with this game, but I stuck in it. And they didn't disappoint. And I even thought in garbage time they would be able to take over a little bit, and they couldn't even do that. That was very disappointing. To answer your question, no, I mean, it's actually better that they kind of just got swept, because now they can assess everything, because just winning one game and coming home and then losing on your home court would just, I think that would hurt fans a lot more. But I mean, it would have been nice if they did put up a fight. They didn't in game four.
Yeah, no, that's fair. In fairness to the Bebe decision, people were knocking that pretty hard. And, like, I kind of understood the logic behind it. Serge Ibaka was doing the thing where whenever he gets a pass to him on the short roll, he doesn't know how to get the ball out of his hands. It just, like, sticks there, and he is clueless. And he was, like, every time he got the ball, something bad was happening in that game. He had 3 turnovers. I feel like he touched the ball, like, 6 times. On times where he didn't shoot, like, it was just a disaster. And Bebe's a very good passer, and, like, he's a guy who in these very playoffs has come in and kind of provided a bit of a spark when it was really needed. Like that game one or game two against the Wizards, like, that was, you know, a really great fun moment for Bebe to come in and have that legendary 1-1-1 line of stat line. Like, I could see the logic behind it, considering they didn't have any playmaking in the short roll. I mean, you could have just put Jonas in, I suppose, and, you know, he was pretty good last night. He was probably the best Raptor, but I didn't hate the decision. I think it was an okay decision that just went terribly poorly. It was like the bottom level of potential outcomes for Lucas Nogueira stretches, and, you know, obviously that burned them. But when you're down 3-0, why not try something that's kind of worked in the past to, you know, either extremely good or extremely bad effect? I didn't have an enormous problem with it, but yeah, it was a bummer. And that might be the last we ever see of Bebe, which makes me just profoundly sad. I don't know. John, I guess we don't really have to talk about the game anymore. The series was a bummer. It was a disappointment. They were favorites going in. It didn't work out, and now we're sort of left to pick up the wreckage. The report came out today that from Josh Lewenberg and from others as well, Ryan Wohlstadt, Michael Grange, that it seems the Raptors are leaning towards moving on from Dwayne Casey. Do you think that is a fair decision? Is that something you agree with, considering how the series went? Or is, you know, the whole LeBron thing kind of just like a thing that's not going to be solved by any coach, so it doesn't really matter? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know where I exactly fall on this yet. I feel like Dwayne Casey wasn't that great in this series. It wasn't a great series for him. But a lot of it was just reactionary to trying to get something to work, especially with the changing rotations and stuff like that. I thought he was just, after game one, just trying to throw stuff at the board and see what would work. But, you know, there was a lot of stuff where LeBron just picked them apart very easily. And I don't know how much of that is Dwayne Casey and how much of that is the Raptors not playing well defensively, not being dialed in, just not knowing exactly where they should be on the court. And it's hard to judge that stuff, you know, just being one day out of the series and not having investigated it that much. But I don't know if Dwayne Casey's head should be on a stick for what happened to the Raptors in this series. I do feel like he didn't have a great series, but it's professional sports, and in these types of scenarios, it always seems like somebody has to take the blame, and coaching is usually the easiest thing for it. And it's a repeatable kind of offense. They got swept last year, they got swept this year, obviously, but there's not a lot of through lines, I don't think, between last year and this year as far as the team is made up and how they were playing kind of coming into the series. But yeah, I feel like it's just something that's going to happen. I'm not sure if it's warranted or not, but it is going to be kind of a strange thing if he does win Coach of the Year. I don't think he's going to. I think Brad Stevens is going to, but if he wins Coach of the Year after he's been fired, because the fair thing would be to fire him soon so he can kind of apply for one of those 5 openings that are out there in the NBA. And not necessarily wait until the awards are out there. So I would think that if it's going to be a kill, it's going to be a mercy kill and kind of happen pretty quickly, so he could kind of get out there and see if the Charlotte job, the Orlando job, or any of those other ones are available to him.
Yeah, man. Like,
I agree. Sorry to interject,
no,
but I can't see it going past the, like, a decision is going to be made by the end of the week. I think it's going to be that quick. The organization shown in the past that they're very patient with their decision making, but I think this is not a decision they've made just like in the last couple of days or just based off this series. This is a resume that's been going on since Casey was hired. It seems almost like year in, year out, there's a chance for him to be fired. Last year, there was a really good chance that he wasn't, and then he brought him back, and then everyone's like, okay, in Masai we trust, so let's not, you know, panic. We'll give him the shot. He was given the shot this year. Looking at defensive schemes and the kind of, like, the way the series kind of went, and even against Washington a little bit too, the turnovers were really bad. They weren't able to take care of the rock. Yes, there's obviously an onus you have to put on the players, but it all starts from your leadership, and I don't feel like there was enough out coaching by any means. Like, Tyronn Lue is not even a good coach, and we can easily say that I wouldn't like put Casey in a better group ahead of him based on the series that we just watched. And that's really disappointing, because to get out coached by a player on the team, like, let that be one of the greatest of all time, or possibly one of the greatest of all time, in LeBron, but it's just the way it looks. I think right now, even the fan base, they just need change. They can't, if they bring back, we'll get to this, but if they bring back the whole team just the way it is, I don't see a lot of fans jumping to buy tickets anymore, because they just don't feel like they can buy into the system, and something's going to have to change. And obviously the easiest change would be into the coaching. And we both, all three of us, know that there is a coach on the rise within our own internal system, possibly three different suitors, which was also mentioned in that article that Josh Ludenberg said that could be a potential replacement.
Yeah, no, for sure. They're internal candidates, and I think you want to go internal just because of the foundation that Casey's laid. And I think if you move on to someone else, like, they're going to bring in a whole new group of people, and then you're looking at how does it gel with Kyle and DeMar? Or do you even keep Kyle and DeMar at that point? Like, you're kind of looking at a weird situation. It's just, but like, I don't really. I'm still very torn about it, because I think Dwayne Casey is a very good coach. I think he's an excellent big picture coach. I think there are very few coaches in the league who are as good big picture wise, managing relationships, sort of setting guys up for season long success, than Dwayne Casey. He's excellent. The in game tactician stuff in the playoffs has been a problem, and I think it was in this series. The rotations were weird. Using too much of Ibaka and Poeltl in the first round was just like, stop doing that. You know it doesn't work. Stop doing it. And there were just a few things here and there where it kind of cropped up. At the same time, I don't really see how a new coach coming in changes the problem that this team has faced, which is that they have less talent than a team that has LeBron James on it. And that's always going to be the problem. And, you know, as long as you have Kyle and DeMar, that's always going to be your limiting factor. It's not the coach. It's not the system. I think it's just Kyle and DeMar themselves. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, it's totally okay to be a 55-win team that doesn't win titles. Like, I think that's totally reasonable. That I enjoy the hell out of it. I'm here for that. And I can live with that. I've made my peace with that. But, you know, I think because of the way it's gone down, and I think in particular the defensive scheme, and I think Mike Zavagno from Fear the Sword made a really good point about this over the course of the weekend, I think, when he was talking about how the Rockets and Raptors compared in terms of how they came into this season. The Rockets built their team entirely with the vision of beating the Warriors and nothing else. Like, they were like, all right, we're going to switch everything. We're going to shoot a million threes. We're going to have guys all over the court who are similarly sized, who all can play defense, who all can shoot, who all have a little bit of ability to handle the ball, and we're going to try to beat the Warriors that way. The Raptors, their system changed this season. I think the offense, you know, I think it translated in the playoffs pretty well anyway. Like, they only got 15 threes up in game four against the Cavs, and it was a disaster. But, like, for the most part, I think the offense ran pretty well. I had no issues with it. It was the defense that wasn't really geared to stopping the Cavs. And I think we saw over the course of the season, it wasn't geared to stopping, like, the top-level offenses in the league. And I think you kind of, you know, it's hard to say who's to blame there, because Dwayne Casey suited the system, a conservative drop-back scheme, to the guys that he had on hand, in particular Jonas Valanciunas, who, to JV's credit, got much better defensively this season, was much better around the rim as a rim protector with the verticality and stuff, and not getting sort of stuck in no man's land as much as he used to. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I don't know what else Casey should have done. I think the way the roster's set up, I don't think he could have gone with a more aggressive switching scheme or a more aggressive trapping scheme or whatever. Like, I think he was kind of stuck with what he had on hand, and that was the best defensive system to play considering the talent on hand. So I don't know, again, if I should blame at Casey for that either. It's so hard. There's so many different reasons why this didn't work against the Cavs this time around, but I agree. Like, I think it makes sense if this is going to be the move this summer. I think it makes sense to bring back Kyle and DeMar and Jonas and whatever. Like, I'm happy doing that. I have no problem doing that and staying good. But if you're going to do something to sort of appease the fan base, a coaching change makes sense. I'm not sure about Stackhouse. I know everyone loves Stackhouse, and I feel like the existence of Stackhouse makes so many more people urgent to sort of move on from Casey, but I think Nurse is the better choice. He's been on the Raptors bench for longer. He was a big engineer in the offensive change this season, and I worry about like a hard, you know, personality like Lowry dealing with a guy like Stackhouse, who himself is like a pretty combative person, right? Like, it's not a bad thing on either of them. It's what makes them good, I think, but I worry about the relationships that Casey's forged with especially Lowry and DeRozan and how that might be affected by a new coach. And I feel like Nurse probably has a better chance of maintaining whatever Casey had there, but that could be wrong. I don't know, but that's just kind of my sense of things. John, I don't know, Turco, go to be different names. You're confusing me.
You can just go by our last name. It's pretty simple. It's G and T.
I know.
These are initials.
G. I don't know. Do you have anything else to add there? I rambled on there, but I don't know. Where are you at with, like, Casey's... Is it the right call? I don't know, man.
I really don't know. Like, I think we're kind of in the same boat here. Like, yeah. I feel like something should be done, and I feel like it's kind of like when you have a really bad experience at a restaurant and you just want to leave a Yelp review just to do something about it. You don't really actually want to complain, but you want to do something and write something.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like something should happen here, and that's the easiest thing to happen. I agree with you on Nurse being my preferred candidate, but there's just something about this situation where, you know, I want some sort of change to happen, and it feels like the players are kind of locked in where they are. Due to contracts and all that, like, I'm not sure, there's probably no appetite out there for Kyle Lowry to be traded. Maybe there's somebody chomping at the bit to have DeMar DeRozan as a second or third piece, but I don't know what that team is, or, you know, what they're going to do with that. So, again, can the Raptors get a haul out of it, period? So I don't know. It's the easiest move to make, and it's probably the right move to make at this point, but I don't know how much fault, I don't know how much it's his fault. Like,
yeah.
It's just so hard with coaching to know whose idea this was and whose idea that was, especially with a collaborative kind of coaching team that the Raptors had. I mean, they've got assistants doing a whole lot on the bench. They've obviously, Nick Nurse is a huge part of what the Raptors do on offense. And you just don't know how much is Casey's fault and how much isn't. Obviously, the in-game tactician stuff was him, and it was faulty at different points in the playoffs. But again, how much of that is just having the wrong personnel on the floor, and how much of it is just they don't have the pieces to beat basically the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors. Like, they can play back and play the Rockets like they did in March and kind of guard the rim because the Rockets aren't going to take mid-range jumpers. But if they are playing a team with a five who can shoot the ball, they're basically screwed because Ibaka's wooden, Valanciunas just can't do it, and the other guys just aren't ready for that kind of pressure. So it is what it is. They basically can't play the two best teams in the NBA, and that lines them up with about 25 other teams. So yeah. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Amazing Yelp analogy, by the way. I have to give mad respect for that. When you said it, I was just like, damn, I was waiting for someone to kind of say some form of an analogy to help relate, and that was perfect. I disagree with both of you. I do believe this decision is a little bit easier than both of you are letting on. In regards to Nick Nurse, he is the offensive coordinator. They finally bought into his system, and you kind of saw it this regular season in the offense and the ball movement, which was great. And then they bought into the system. And obviously, Casey has an amazing relationship. He called DeMar DeRozan his son on countless of occasions, even Terrence Ross and a bunch of other guys. But at some point, just like the Hawks did, the Bulls did, the Wizards team when LeBron was on the Cavs, all these teams that faced up against LeBron eventually did have to blow it up to a certain degree just to get better for the future, to building a contender. Because Sean, you mentioned, oh, winning 55 games but never winning anything, I think I'm okay with that. That should be good enough. You're in a competitive sport. The whole reason why you're in this league is to win. If you're not in it to win it, then there's, like, I see very little for me to even follow this team. because if you're not going to try to win the whole NBA title, what's the point? Like, you can get a little bit of excitement here and there, but I feel like the reason why we were all so heartbroken through this series is because we all believed, we actually genuinely believed, a good 60% of our body and blood and sweat and tears going into the season, that they had a chance to be in the NBA Finals. Whether they won it, that's a different story. But just to be there, it makes it that much more rewarding. And you need to have a championship-type mindset, and I think KC has lost it. He's 23-30 in the playoffs. That's his record. That has to constitute for something. This is not a resume that just happened over this one series. This is the third straight year where they got swept out of the playoffs. It's yeah. not a good look.
Yeah, but also you take away the 12 losses to LeBron, and it becomes different. And I think that, like you mentioned, all the teams that kind of blew it up because LeBron existed. Like, why did they have to blow it up? Why, like, in the face of, like, this has happened to teams before in the Jordan era, like the Knicks and the Heat or whatever, like the Pacers. Like, why do you have to blow it up when you're in the face of the maybe the greatest player of all time? Like, I don't really, like, it's such a ridiculous bell curve to grade yourself against.
And so here's my rebuttal, because there's teams in the West that have beaten LeBron.
There's one team in the West. Like, the Spurs were, like, this otherworldly team the year they beat them. The Mavs were this, like, awkward, like, weird sort of thing before LeBron ever became what LeBron was. And now you need a team with four superstars, which is unattainable because of all the luck that went into attaining that team, to beat LeBron. Like, it's teams have, like, moved heaven and earth to try to beat him, and it's sort of changed the face of the league because he is LeBron. And, like, in the Eastern Conference, like, there's no realistic path to getting a player who's as good as LeBron. And then, like, there's always going to be some team at the top of the conference who's this sort of team, right? It's, you know, it's the Celtics, it's the Sixers in the next few years. You know, it was the Pistons in the past or whatever. I just think you got to kind of just go about what your own trajectory is and worry about what is around you later. And yes, it sucks to keep losing to LeBron every year. But guess what? The Raptors have lost to LeBron in the playoffs, deep in the playoffs, more than any other team because they've been really good for a long time. And that's valuable. That is for a team that was so shitty for so long to have a team that is actually in and out, very good, wins 50 games. Like, that matters. That matters as just for your sort of clout as a franchise. That matters for, you know, what your image is, you know, when you try to pitch free agents and stuff like that. And, like, the Raptors have gone in the last 5 years from being a total outpost to being, you know, one of the more relevant franchises in the league. And I don't think you can just, like, try to blow that up, because it's impossible to say whether or not you're going to have a Sixers-like rebuild or a Magic-like rebuild. It's so based on luck. You can, like, I believe in Masai Ujiri a lot. Like, I think he's great. But I just, it's to blow it all up and to sort of try to restart, whether it's just firing Casey. Like, I don't think Casey does much for blowing it up. I think you have to get rid of the players in order to ensure that. Like, you set yourself up, you know, kind of banking on a whole lot of luck. And I think where they're at right now, considering you have Fred and OG and Pascal and Yak and all these guys, like, they might be too good to be a bottom of the lottery type team at this point. Like, already, they're already ahead of that curve. So I think you're setting yourself up for a lot of strife if you say, all right, we're trading away the three best players and we're just going to, you know, try to tank. I don't think you're going to be able to tank hard enough. And then you're stuck in a place where, you know, you could be stuck in the 55-win treadmill or the 40-win treadmill or the 35-win treadmill.
Could be Charlotte.
Yeah, you could be Charlotte or the Kings or Miami. Even Miami. Miami's in a bad spot compared to the Raptors now, too. A 40-ass win team every year. Like, I just think where the Raptors are now, it's desirable for, like, 24 other teams in the league. And I don't think you – I think you should just, like, play out the string and just – while you're still capable of being a 50-plus win team, put yourself in a position, whether LeBron moves next season or whatever. You know, the Celtics and Sixers are excellent, but, you know, they rely on guys who get hurt all the time, whether it's Joel Embiid or Kyrie Irving or Gordon Hayward. We don't know what he's going to look like coming back after getting his leg snapped in half. Like, there's all these variables, and I think putting yourself in a position to capitalize if some weird shit happens is a lot more preferable to just, like, nuking it all. And then a year from now, if the things do happen, if Joel Embiid does get hurt, if LeBron does go west, if the Celtics don't, you know, if Kyrie gets hurt or Horford gets old or whatever, and you're looking at the East like, damn, we could have been there, but we're sitting here with 30 wins because we traded all of our good players. Like, I think you'll be kicking yourself. So I just think, while it's you want to win a title, I agree, there's so much value in being a good team over a long period of time and giving yourself 82 games of fun. Like, people discredit the regular season so much. It's stupid. It's 6 months of our lives every year. It's awesome. It's great. It's nightly entertainment. It's nightly enjoyment. 59 wins was nothing to sneeze at. There was a lot of good in there. And we'll get to a Twitter question about this later, but I think you have to think long and hard before you throw that all away just because you can't get past the greatest player of all time, because I don't really think there's a path around that.
I'll pipe in here and just say that there are different, you know, there are different scenarios for each of these teams that LeBron beat, basically, right? Like, the Bulls, way back when, basically got tanked because Rose got hurt and was never the same player. The 60-win Hawks couldn't pay Al Horford, and he went elsewhere. And just, like, the time clock kind of went up on these teams based on contracts and just based on injuries or bad luck or whatever it was. Like, the time on the Raptors is not over yet. Like, there are still 2 years of contracts for these three guys. And none of those teams in the past really just decided to change the team by trading. And it's so hard to do in today's NBA to trade these big contracts. And, you know, there's so few examples of trading $30 million contracts. And all three of these guys are, you know, around that mark. And to get that kind of money back, you're basically saying you're going to take on a really bad player who's getting paid too much money and some picks and some, you know, some stuff that you don't know what it's going to turn into. So I think the Raptors would be doing themselves a disservice, and this gets to the personnel, and it kind of bypasses the coaching conversation, which I think we're more or less done with.
Yeah.
I think that they would be doing themselves a disservice to change the personnel of the players that they have, because it's not a smart business decision at this point. Like, they should pay these guys, and if the team is still on the treadmill in 2 years, and they've lost to LeBron two more times and we're just sick of it, then you move on and you see what the young guys can do and you reset a little bit and go back to, you know, being a mediocre team for a little bit. Maybe, you know, try to draw a free agent at that point. But I think that it would be difficult and a bad decision to try to move these contracts, because I don't think you're going to get anything good in return. And blowing it up for the sake of blowing up has not worked for any team except for Philadelphia, and it took them 7 years to be good.
Well, yeah, and that was an extreme case. But I'm not pro blowing it up. I want to make that clear, because I don't see, if you're looking on a franchise business perspective, you have probably DeMar DeRozan is the best developed internal player that the franchise has ever had. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Terrence Ross, but yeah.
Oh, nice shade throw. And so Shade. DeMar DeRozan is by far
you're new
the
here.
Most
you're
well
new, you're new on the podcast.
Sorry?
You're new here. The Terrence Ross thing was not Shade. I'm like 60% serious about that. There's a Terrence Ross picture framed above the desk at which I'm recording this podcast. You'll learn.
Aww,
it's okay.
It's cute that you still believe in his potential. Okay. So back to DeMar. So DeMar DeRozan is, like I said, the best developed franchise player that they've ever had. He's shown to them, as long as we're winning, I'm willing to be completely loyal to this franchise. I want to end my career here. I want to do the Kobe thing. There's not many players out there. We agree. All the DeRozan intangibles, being able to year after year push his ceiling, get better, try to make sure, probably arguably one of the best all-star team players that are out there in the league. Borderline kind of can be MVP candidate, yada, yada, yada. I can praise him as much as anybody else. So you know he's the guy that's going to give you the most value in the trade. I agree you should never trade him, because you're not going to get a player like that in return. Mm-hmm. And there's talks of, like, you know, people saying Middleton is better and Avery Bradley, yada, yada. It doesn't even compare. His intangibles outweigh the rest of them. But when it comes to blowing it up a little bit, there is a such thing as tweaking the roster. So if you look at last year's changes to this year, they got rid of probably three key rotation players, and then they allowed the youth to come up and develop and become better. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to believe they can't do the same thing this year to help with that. So last year, if we compare, we had Patrick Patterson, who was gone, who's going to be dead out of the league probably in the next 2 years, because he's not playing well, even in the Thunder. And then you have PJ Tucker, who went to the Rockets. That was a little bit of a blow. I was kind of hoping he would stay with Toronto. But anyways, he went there, and he's doing what he does over there. And then you had to get rid of a first and a second just to get rid of the terrible contract of Damari Carroll to the Brooklyn Nets. Now, Serge Ibaka, to me, in my opinion, is in that Damari Carroll role right now. He's underperforming based on what we're paying him. He's going to be getting paid just just south of $22 million next year, which is ludicrous for what the production he provides. And he plays like he's fit. Like we talked about this so many times. He plays like he's a 50-year-old out there, and it's really hard to watch. And that is probably their biggest hole in the front court, is in that four or that stretch five position, which is now where the majority of the teams, especially the contending teams, are leaning towards. So this quote-unquote blow it up is kind of still part of your culture reset, in the sense that you're becoming more of a modernized team. Now, if we want to talk about which players that they have an opportunity of signing, so you have Lucas Nogueira and you have Fred VanVleet, are both going to be restricted free agents next year. Mm-hmm. Now, they already not qualified for Lucas Nogueira's RFA. They still have another chance to do so if they want to, but odds are they're not going to sign him because, and you mentioned him earlier in that Washington series, he had one good game and out of 10. To be a third string backup in a center position at this point, like, I don't see it unless you really plan on maybe moving Valanciunas and giving Poeltl the starting job or vice versa. Then maybe you can think about re-signing him. But at this point, if you can get whatever you can get from him, great. If not, then I think it's okay to leave. And it's Fred VanVleet, the one player I've been saying kind of all season, I don't think he's going to come back. Then he comes today and he says the right thing on the podium. He's like, oh, I love Toronto. Why would I ever want to leave? But he also put into Timbe, it's like it all surrounds winning. So, I mean, if a team who is winning gives him a better deal, because we can only offer him up to $8 million because we only have a little bit of his bird rights because he hasn't played 3 years with us. I mean, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. They are going to be able to match it, but it's going to put him in the luxury tax. So now you ask yourself, is this team 50 plus win? I don't even want to say 55 because I don't think that's guaranteed. So 50 plus win team, you know you're not going to win a championship. You're only allowed to go 3 out of 4 years in a luxury tax. Is it worth doing next year with this team the way it's currently constructed? Or maybe kind of see what you can do and move a few of these pieces, allow OG to develop a little bit more. I'm going to stop talking. Tell me your opinion.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, paying the luxury tax, I thought, was a thing they would definitely do 2 weeks ago, and maybe I think it's a little bit less now. I also think Fred's back. Like, I think he was too good this season. There was like a range of outcomes for him where he could either be not good enough or too good, where like or like not good but not quite good enough where they weren't going to be able to do it, but or so bad that he was going to be cheap enough that you could bring back. Like, I think he's been so good, you have to keep him. And I think the threat of him losing, like getting poached in RFA, I think is a lot less than it's maybe being made out to be, because no one ever signs anyone to RFA deals. It never happens. There's never offer sheets signed in the NBA. It very rarely happens. And when it does, like, it usually is a burden on the team that's doing it because they're signing guys to enormous back end of the contract in a case like this for Fred VanVleet. You know, the same thing that happened with Tyler Johnson, for example. The back end of Tyler Johnson's deal is like a horrifying mess that the Heat are dealing with now. But like the Nets would have had to deal with it as well. And I feel like the Nets are probably pretty happy that didn't happen to them at this point. So like, I think the threat of that, the specter of it, is probably a little bit less, considering especially that very few teams have a lot of cap space. And there are so many big names out there that I think a lot of teams that could use a Fred VanVleet, like you said, if Fred wants to go somewhere that's winning, teams that are good don't have a ton of space to throw around to go sign a Fred VanVleet as a luxury item, as a backup point guard. So I don't see that really being something that happens. Like, if you can move Serge Ibaka, awesome. You probably have to attach an asset, and you don't have a first-round pick this season, so I doubt you can do it. And also, I don't think Serge is quite on the level of Damari Carroll, because I think Serge's skills that he provides at the position that he's at are useful. And I think he was really bad in the playoffs outside of Game 1 and 2 against the Wizards, and there's no denying that. But I think he still has a useful sort of, you know, chest of tools that he can kind of bust out. And it's nice to have that on the roster. It's not worth $20 million, sure, but it's still nice to have. You know, Valanciunas is interesting. He was really good this season, and he showed a lot of improvement, but maybe there's a limit to how good you can be when you have him as your starting five and playing, you know, 28 minutes a game or whatever it is. And with $17 million on his deal, maybe he did good enough this season that some team can convince themselves that, you know, it's worth trading for him. Maybe he's the guy you sort of trade to get off, you know, the luxury tax bill. Norm Powell is also kind of in there. I don't know if there's a team that's willing to trade for him, but you know, it's going to be, you know, the I don't know. The Norm Powell thing, we need some more time to see how that's going to all transpire. But, yeah, I think the luxury tax thing is less likely this season than I thought it was, you know, going forward, but like a couple weeks ago. But at the same time, like, they set up this window so they could pay the luxury tax next year and the year after and then kind of be done with it after that if they wanted to be. So I don't think they're worrying about repeater taxes or anything like that. And for a 59-win team that was so statistically good, if you can bring everyone back, hope Fred VanVleet kind of improves a little bit, hope OG sort of blossoms, Siakam, Poeltl, these guys, like, this can still be a very good team in position to sort of pounce if things break right in the Eastern Conference. So it kind of goes back to my point, like, put yourself in position, bring everything back, and, like, you, more flexibility opens up in the summer of 2019 when Serge and Kyle become expiring contracts, which would be valuable going forward as opposed to what they've been in the last few years where expiring deals haven't been a thing. You know, I think just it's I don't mind waiting another year for the year that was supposed to be the all-in year for this window anyway. Like, they moved the goalposts on themselves this season by being so good. They were supposed to be better next year, 2018-19, and I think it's worth sort of kicking it around and bringing back the band, even if it's, you know, you got a couple of sort of odious contracts. I think you can do it for 1 year, pay the tax, and then you can reevaluate after that season. But I don't know. Gotis, what do you think?
I don't have a lot to add. I think you guys have had a good debate about it. I think that there's just the window right now, and I go back to that. It's just 2 years, and then you do whatever you have to do after that. I mean, the summer 2020 isn't necessarily a super hot free agent market, but yeah, I think it's just at this point you run it back. If there's a deal to be had, you can make it. But yeah, I mean, I go to Sean's point about, you know, being able to have the opportunity to take advantage of fluke stuff that happens in the NBA. And, you know, the Raptors are right there right now, and it didn't break their way this year, and maybe they do need the breaks more than we thought they would, but yeah, that it is what it is, and you want to kind of be there so that you can take advantage of those opportunities.
All right, I'm going to be the pessimistic in the group. It's so hard for me to justify a man who's not even in rotation, you got to pay him $9.3 million next year, and Norman Powell.
It's already so signed. Hard. There's nothing you can do
so
about it.
Hard.
There's nothing you can do about it, though. It's already signed. Like what do you do? It's already signed.
I feel like there is a team out there that would want to take a chance on him.
Which is fine. Like, I'm cool with that. If you want to trade Norm to get off the tax, fine. I'm cool with that.
And I'm fine with that too. But I mean, they're gonna have to take some salary back, and who's that salary gonna be? But at the same time, it's like, there has to be, I think Masai is not going to be able to just be like, okay, I'm going to stand pat. The fan base is going to be demanding a little bit of, like, consequence to what happened. And realistically speaking, if this was a logical world and this wasn't a Toronto fan base that's so hungry because the Leafs haven't won since 1967 and the Raptors have never really kind of won anything. This is the first time they ever came first in the conference. I mean, it's hard to justify completely standing pat. They're gonna have to make tweaks. CJ Miles kind of underperformed in the playoffs. I mean, there's so many underperformance, and then you can obviously look at the positives. I think Fred VanVleet said the most, like, everything he said on the podium was just like dissecting what he said. He said, obviously I was playing through an injury that would explain why his shooting was so bad. I mean, in a way, his injury kind of helped Toronto re-signing him because it kind of like lowered his value a little bit, because some teams maybe not be paying attention to the injury and just thought maybe he missed two wide open shots in game one against Cleveland that could have kind of took the game down, and they see that clutch factor maybe wasn't there for a team that doesn't follow him too much. But yeah, I mean, they have to do something, and I wouldn't as a fan be okay with just saying, you know what, bring the whole band back together and it'll be fine. There has to be some kind of tweaking, just like they did the year before, kind of see what they can do. Ibaka is not going to be moved. It's like impossible to get rid of his contract. I think no team in the league is going to even look at him as a viable option. And to get rid of Kyle or DeMar, this is a point that I don't think you guys have made, and I think it's really important. If you move one and not the other, how is that going to affect your style of play? They're best friends, they're brothers at this point, and for them to not be playing together, like, I feel like Kyle wouldn't have as good as a game without DeMar there. And then if DeMar were to play without Kyle and then lose his best friend, what would that do with the relationship with the franchise, which on a post game, he's already said that he feels defeated and this is the lowest he's ever felt after a season end.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how much I read into, like, the relationship stuff. Like, these dudes are professional athletes, and they'll be fine, I think. And Kyle's always done well when DeMar sat, and the team has always been excellent in those situations. Like, I'm not advocating for trading either one of them. I guess the big question, though, like, we've kind of been beating around it. You know, you can talk about Jonas or Powell or Ibaka or whatever, but the way to cut salary and get out of the tax the most realistic way and then also get a return is to trade DeMar. I think that's the obvious one. Kyle, I think, is in a weird spot where I think he's too old to and too close to the end of his deal maybe to, you know, fetch a real sort of a substantial return for him. And also, I think Kyle's your best player. And if you want to stay good, I think you have to have Kyle on the team. But DeMar, like, he is, I think, the one more so than Kyle that imposes the ceiling on this team. And that's not like a slight against DeMar. Like, I love DeMar. He's one of my favorite rappers of all time. He's done an amazing job of turning himself into an excellent player from being pretty much just like a dunker early in his career. And like, I have no ill will towards DeMar. I would watch DeMar play basketball on the Raptors for the rest of my life. I don't really care. But if you're looking to try to, you know, move off some salary, his $29 million or whatever it is makes some sense. It's a little bit less than Kyle. He's younger than Kyle. He's got more term left. And I feel like you could probably convince a team to take him on as opposed to Kyle and give you something of substantial return back. I don't know what team that is.
It'll be discounted. No matter what you get, it'll be a discount.
Sure, sure.
Every superstar that gets traded in this league,
sure.
Like, you can look at the Paul George trade, you can look at the Jimmy Butler trade, you can even look at Kyrie Irving as like a really bad example.
Yeah.
All of those were discounted, right?
Agreed.
You're not going to get the same value.
No, the idea I think with DeMar is you get pieces that better fit this roster. And sort of maybe make it a more conducive team to, you know, being a more switching style defense, a more modern type team, I guess, that would be the case. And I don't know if there's a team out there that, you know, offers some sort of package like that. I haven't really looked into it because I don't think it's all that likely, but he is the guy. If you're going to trade something, it's him. Gotis, like, why am I hearing weird echoes at this point?
That was me yelling Spurs.
Oh, okay.
Leonard?
Well, it depends on how bad that gets, you know?
Yeah. Wait, what happened?
Well, it depends on how bad the relationship between Kawhi and Pop is.
Wait, like, what happened? Oh, we're talking about trading for Kawhi. Oh, I see what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen, but okay. Go on.
Twitter has been hating on the Leonard talk for, I don't know, what, weeks now?
It's just dumb. It's not going to happen. Like, there are other teams out there who have stuff that the Raptors don't. The Raptors don't even have a first-round pick. Like,
I don't know. I think you're underselling the Rudy Gay, DeMar DeRozan connection.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. I didn't even think of that. That's brutal.
I mean, that...
I honestly didn't even consider how bad that would be.
Can you imagine...
No, but I mean, honestly, no way.
I would
there's
respect...
There's no way it'd be DeMar for Leonard. It would have to be someone young, a starter. You're looking at possibly OG Anunoby going the other way, and then for salary implications, it's going to have to some kind of match, but it's going to be prospects and draft picks, and definitely a promising starter. That's what they're going to want if they do the trade.
Can I just say how beautiful it would be for a basketball team in 2018 to have LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan, and Tony Parker on their team? Mwah! Mwah. Just like a big fuck you to three-pointers. I would kind of dig it. I think it would be kind of... It's like art basketball. I'd be down for it. But no, like, go to... A real take, please, about DeMar DeRozan trading. Trading DeMar DeRozan. Like, do you think it's worth exploring? Or, like, is it just you're not going to get enough back for him to really make it a thing? And is it too much of a, you know, a... upheaval of sort of what's made the Raptors over the last 7 years? Like, DeMar's a huge part of that, and trading him, it feels icky. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done like any trade machine stuff. Like,
never do trade machine stuff, by the way. Fuck the trade machine forever. Carry on.
Maybe the Lakers like want to give up the who's the big white guy who they signed like 5 minutes into I forget his name.
Mozgov?
Is he still on there?
They traded him to the Nets. In the D'Angelo Russell trade.
Maybe we could trade, like, we could get Brooke Lopez, and we could have, like, the Triple Towers or something.
Oh.
Get, like, Brooke Lopez and, like, Randall, and just, like, start over with that. Like, I don't know. Like, it's all going to be, like, shit.
Why don't you go so like bad that. And get Robin and Brooke and you get the brothers together?
And Valanciunas.
And Valanciunas. Great. No defense forever.
You joke, but no, I would.
I don't have a real take. Like, I don't have a real take on this because I don't know what the trades would be. And I don't feel like they're going to be that good. Like,
LeBron needs to make a decision if he's staying east or going west. And every team in the league is going to wait a whole week before anything gets done. And it's going to suck for draft day. That's all I'm saying. Because they have their 2019 pick that's going to be available to be traded if they want to once this draft gets done. Because it's currently being held for protection issues, which is not going to work. They already lost their 2018 pick to the Brooklyn Nets this year. So, I mean, it is possible for them to trade a first-round pick for next year, which is going to be not mid to high 20s. So I don't know what team would find that valuable. But, man, when it comes to the free agency and everything that's going to happen in massive trades, like, you don't think Paul George is going to wait until LeBron makes a decision or any of the other free agents? It's if LeBron goes west, this decision about blowing it up makes it so much easier to stand pat and only get to worry about Boston and Philly and hope Philly is injury prone and hope Boston's injury prone, and then you're probably going to be the best team in the east, and then you kind of see who you faced in the west and hope that they're beat up enough that you can beat them.
I think they could beat either of those teams anyway, because the issue is with the Cavs that Valanciunas just can't stay on the court. And if he's back with the team, I think he can at least bang with Embiid, and he could at least bang with Horford and all that stuff. So
for sure.
Yeah.
It's hard to argue that, but if he stays, if LeBron, let's say, like, the scenario is that LeBron goes to Philly, he stays in the Cavs. Possibly, I heard rumors of him possibly joining Boston. I don't even know how that would even work.
There's no goddamn way he's going to Boston.
No, I don't see it working, but there are reports saying that it is possible that Danny Ainge can work something out to make it happen.
Is that on the Ringer? Or?
Yeah, it was on the Ringer. They're so bad. They're so biased over there. But there was also the New York connection with David Fizdale now. I doubt that's going to happen.
Please, LeBron, go sign Andrew, with...
Out of all people, trying to recruit LeBron, and they hate each other.
Yeah, please, please, LeBron, go sign with Kristaps's monkey-ass ACL and Frank Ntilikina. Please go do that. I shouldn't say that. I love Frankie Smokes. I have a Frankie Smokes t-shirt. I adore that man. But, no, here's the thing. The DeMar thing, I think, would have to wait until after the free agency dust settles, and we'd see, like, who got screwed. Like, if the Lakers get screwed, maybe Julius Randle is an interesting guy to try to target because he's a very good defender who can play a couple positions and sort of switch across. And I fuck with Julius Randle hard. I would be down for that. But, no, I think there's... Yeah, it's going to take time. And also, honestly, it's probably not going to happen because it's hard to maneuver these enormous trades in the NBA. And I think the Raptors, where they're at, are pretty good just sticking with their core and trying to, you know, improve on the edges. If they can consolidate a couple of the young guys maybe to try to make a deal, maybe you do that. But we've gone extremely long on this stuff. Let's get to the questions because we have like a million of those. So let me pull these up here. Here we go. Question number one from Justin Rowan.
No.
Justin Rowan. Do you hang out with Justin, by the way, John? Like, are you guys friends in Winnipeg? Or, like, what's the deal there?
No, we just tweet.
Okay. You should hang out. It's fun to meet people in your city, and there's no one else in your city.
That's true. He's the only one.
I guess you got Matt Schantz. He's cool, too.
Now we just have the Jets to bond over, so... Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, they're right. The Cavs are still in it.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Justin Rowan.
I forgot about that.
Regrettable human being. Asks... Who annoyed you the most in this round? It can be a player, media, etc. Godus, you first.
Oh, can I just say the entire Ringer staff? In the last 2 days. Except for Danny Chow, who wrote an excellent piece late last night after Game 4. Probably one of the top three pieces about the Raptors this week, which is so ironic because that site, both on Twitter and in their pieces, have just been hilarious. And they're clearly not watching the Raptors-ness. Except for Danny Chow, who's awesome. And then my other co-winner is the Raptors broadcast during the second half, and I normally stand for the TSN broadcast, but the whole, like, trying to handhold the viewing audience into understanding that it's just LeBron and it's just something that a lot of teams go through and kind of just watering it down to make everybody feel better. I don't mess with that. I don't like when they do that.
Hard disagree. That annual quarter and a half of comforting, it soothes me. I like it.
I hate it.
Turco, who annoyed you most from this series?
Can I mention a player? Or
Yeah, go nuts. It can be anybody.
I mean, if you're talking about this series or in the playoffs in general, I think the Beal and Wall complaining about the refs was probably the most annoyed I've been.
The question was just for this round, but I take that answer and accept it.
But if we're going to talk about this series, I mean, Fox Sports 1 is my double down.
All that work.
The baby dinos and Shannon Sharp. Man, Shannon Sharp needs to eat a humble pie every once in a while. I can't, I actually used to watch their show and actually respect them when it came to football stuff. And then now when it comes to basketball, I'm just like, you are such a Cleveland homer. You ride on that D of LeBron no matter how soft it is. Like, I can't do it anymore. I can't. FS1 is like banned. They got rid of Jay and Dan. There's no reason for me to watch them anymore. Stephen A. Smith is annoying, but at least Max Kellerman kind of believes in them. Chuck is always a Canadian citizen by heart. The media was really, the American media in general is just, they killed the Raptors. That's why I think they need to do something, and I think the organization knows it, because they know how much of a joke they've been in the series.
Well, here's the
it's
thing.
It's really, really unfortunate.
Guess what, Raptors fans? You fucking asked for it for years, saying the Raptors aren't covered enough in America.
They got lots of coverage.
You could have just, read the nice podcast, read blogs and podcasts in the up here that you could definitely subscribe to and download for free in most cases, and gotten your fix of Raptors coverage instead of needing the American angle, which was always going to be less informed and more ignorant than the local angle anyway. Subscribe to Locked On Raptors, the local angle on the Toronto Raptors, one of the Locked On Podcast Network's 30 NBA team podcasts. My most annoying...
Wow, what a plug.
My most
awesome.
Annoying person from the series. John, you kind of took the words out of my mouth with the ringer. I mean, the ringers, most articles that are like millennials are killing whatever, I think are dumb, because I think millennials, pretty solid generation. The ringer makes me question it pretty hard. But anyway, my most annoying, probably J.R. Smith for shooting 77% from three after just pissing the bed in the first round. That's probably it. J.R. Smith. Or Jeff Green, who got really hot for a couple games there too. Both all the dumb Cavs who were bad, who got good, pissed me off. Anyway, next question. This one comes from Robert Flom. Actually, this is a very long question. So you guys just go from a let's just do rapid fire for these lists. Robert Flom, rank the top five Raptors you wouldn't want to see traded, either emotionally or from a basketball perspective. Go to start Ooh. With you.
Wait, are we doing all five?
Just do your five quick, and then we'll each do our five.
Okay, OG, Kyle. I would have to say DeLon, even though that might be questionable. Fred and Pascal.
Turks, over to you.
If Fred resigns, then sure, I'll put him on there. I'll substitute Lowry for DeRozan, and I will substitute Van Vliet for Poeltl.
So you'd rather see Lowry traded than DeMar?
Yep.
Ooh.
There's a take.
Anytime you could trade a 32-year-old for $31 million as opposed to DeMar DeRozan, a guy who already said he'll end his career with you. I mean, he's 28. He's in his prime. We can debate semantics, but those are my top five. I mean, I'm just – obviously, it's the one young guy's and one person from the core. Four young guys and one guy from the core.
But do the Raptors really want DeMar DeRozan to retire with them? I don't know. Kyle Lowry's better.
I would, man. Don't hate on him. He's
I love DeMar.
DeMar
is on my list, by the way. But Kyle's a better player and has less years on his contract and is a better player. My top five, OG, Lowry, DeMar, Siakam, and Fred VanVleet. I think you could
Who's
trade
the GoDaddy person next year, though?
Oh, God.
Whoever it is can't take that deal because they're going to be bad this year.
Just
year.
Please, please make it Lorenzo Brown. Just, it's a lost cause anyway. Please do it.
It's going to be Fred. It's going to be Fred.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, then I'll we could trade DeLon instead of Fred. Or not, trade Fred instead of DeLon. I'm losing my mind. Next question. I've talked so much about the Raptors today, I want to die. Slamming Danny G, our friend, Dan Grant. Funeral should be fun. Mine's going to be a kegger. Give me your top three moments, things, happenings from this season. The best in Raptors history. You droopy dogs. Let's each give one. How about that? John.
Sounds good.
Gotis.
The Houston game.
Which one?
The win. The good one.
Okay.
The March one.
That's a good call. Why?
Because it was awesome, and they beat Houston in March, and ended that win streak and extended their own, and it was awesome, and they played awesome defense, and it was awesome.
All fair and good points. Turco.
I think you said awesome like four times in one sentence. So I guess it was awesome. Man, that one's hard to argue. I agree. It should be the Rockets for sure. I think the win streak was just great to watch. I think it's 13 wins they ended with.
Yeah.
Just
11.
Blowing guys
11.
Out by like plus 15 points. It was great. That was just a good time to be a Raptors fan and actually believing in the team.
Yeah, that's fair. Mine, I think, is when they slapped the Cavs by 34 points and the bench went crazy. And I think they were down Kyle and Serge in that game. I watched that game alone in my living room, and my girlfriend came in and was like, "You're making a lot of your 'the Raptors are doing nice things' giggles tonight." And that was the peak of my happiness this year. It was beautiful. It was just like such a fun game. They just shit-kicked the Cavs. And that's right up there. Also, honorable mentions, the DeRozan 52-point game on New Year's Day over the Bucks. That was wild. I know it ended in a loss, but JV's dunk on John Henson that he definitely got fouled on but didn't get called, that was killer. DeMar's dunk on Anthony Tolliver and then the three by Fred VanVleet to get the win in that game. There was a few other great ones. I mean, the first Houston game, the first game that OG started and like locked the fuck up. James Harden, that was beautiful. It was great. Yeah, lots of great times from this season. It was a really fun season to go
Detroit
back.
Detroit overtime winner when DeMar dunked it to tie the game.
Yeah, I just said that. Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
I thought you said Van Vliet's.
Well,
because
he dunked on Tolliver
to
send it to
dunk
OT.
Was like top 10 dunk.
Yeah, he dunked on Tolliver to send it to OT, and then Van Vliet hit the three in OT. It was beautiful.
I just meant the dunk itself.
Oh, the dunk itself was just outstanding.
The dunk, to me, was the top 10 in the season.
And the Mark Jones call, DeMar, detonate, da-da-da-da, some other D word, I can't remember. It was great.
And
made
he
up
did
for
the Bronto thing. And
yeah, he can go away now.
a lot of milestones for the team, 59 wins, most home wins, which is 34.
Yeah.
Most road wins, which I believe is 24. No, 25.
They beat the
25.
Bulls this year again. They swept the Bulls. Like, that shit was awesome.
Just first time winning conference finals, and then they set a lot of bad records in the playoffs, but regular season, a lot of good stuff.
There was the game where DeLon put up like 25 and 13 on the Bulls' head top. That was cool. That was really fun. All right, let's go to the next question here from David White. This is a good question. Who are two non-star players that, if added to this current iteration of the Raptors, would have pushed the Raptors past the Cavs? Let's go with Gotis first.
Is this anyone? Sorry, is this anyone?
Anyone.
Any
two non-star players. Gotis, you.
Two non-star players?
Yeah.
I would say PJ Tucker.
It doesn't have to be former Raptors.
No, it doesn't, but I feel like that would have helped. Paul Millsap, which is a slight, but also true.
Beautiful.
He's not an all-star this year, so I guess that counts, right?
Yeah.
The question didn't say it couldn't be former stars. The Paul Millsap one would have been actually really good against Kevin Love, too, so I kind of agree with that one. Can I say Kyle Korver? instead of CJ Miles.
Sure, if you want, yeah.
Someone who's an actual threat from behind the arc that you actually have to cover, I would prefer that.
Miles was good in this series. I don't know. I thought he was good.
He was mediocre. I had never a problem.
He was pretty good in game 4 and 3. 3 and 4, he was good. But
game 4, he was good. I've never seen him so aggressive before. But
he was awesome in game 3, too. He was part of that lineup at the end.
Yeah. He was decent. His shooting is just, we've talked about it so much. His shooting has been really, really, really bad. It's really off.
Yeah.
He needs to, like, his regular season numbers, because through an 82 game, kind of averaged out to being kind of what you expect when you paid him. But in the playoffs, you hope for an uptick. You kind of hope that he can hit close to that 50% mark like Kyle Korver is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then be an actual consistent threat, because he's not that strong on defense. You kind of need something. He needs to be out there for a reason. And that's what I was kind of hoping for. Korver is, man, such a discounted deal, and he's amazing for the Cavs.
Yeah, that's fair. My picks, Thaddeus Young, who was just so goddamn good for the Pacers against Kevin Love, and switching on to LeBron sometimes, and just, he was so goddamn good. And 2014-15, Portland Trailblazers, Wes Matthews, before the Achilles tear, was a boss, and having good wing defenders who can also shoot 40% from three would have been nice in this series. It was either one or the other, essentially, for the Raptors, and or neither if in the case of Tamar, but that would have been very handy. So yeah, those are my two picks.
2010, Vince Carter, when he hit the game winner for the Mavs.
Also not
or
bad.
Or was that 2011? Yeah, I think it was 2011.
Next question.
I didn't know you can go back in years. If that was the case, then
I think it was 2010 because he wasn't on the title team. I think it was 2010. Because
there you go.
Or it was years? It was like 2013, something like that. Either way, from 40 and dunking at Midlife Vertical. Depressing question: was the culture reset a mirage? The regular season offense was reinvented, but none of the core issues seemed like they were truly addressed. Godis, you.
It wasn't a mirage. I thought that they just stopped doing some things that really helped them in the regular season. Like DeMar didn't make a three in the second round, and JV was hesitant to shoot that. And basically, there was just that kind of, we talked about this on Overtime a lot, just that beat of unconfidence, not being confident. That's not a word. Where
I think it's disconfidence, actually. That's the word you're looking for.
Thank you. They just didn't have that confidence to do what they had been doing all season. I don't think it necessarily was a mirage, but LeBron psyched him out, and they just stopped doing what had made them successful.
Fair enough. Turco?
I agree. I want to add more, but you nailed it right on the head.
Yeah.
We talked about it before. Them losing game one lost them the series.
Yeah, I think that kind of broke them.
You can't miss 11 in a row and then think that, oh, okay, we were 1 point away when it should have been in. I still don't understand why no one dunked it, or at least tried to.
Yeah, no, that's fair. All right.
The morality was gone.
Next question. We go to... we have so many questions. I also don't think it was a mirage. I think the core issues that were in the past were the bad offense that was easily prone to the playoff defenses. That changed. It was not as prone this season. I think the defense became a new issue this season that maybe with time could be rectified, but that's about it. All right, last question, then we'll get to the last segment. What are the 1 to 2 skills each Raptor should work on in developing in the offseason? So let's go one skill, each of the Raptors. Godis, Serge Ibaka.
Oh boy.
Everything.
Yoga.
Yeah, that's a great one. Becoming vegan. Yeah, that allows you to be younger. I don't know, man.
No, man. He's got to eat the fumboa. You can't go vegan. He's got to keep Eve's grill alive. For Ibaka, I guess. Actually, learning to make a pass on the short roll. I blame Russell Westbrook for that inability in his game. It's all Russell Westbrook's fault for being Russell Westbrook. And Ibaka just hasn't been able to shake that since. Learning how to make a pass on the short roll. CJ Miles, Godis.
Oh, boy. defend Gooder.
Fair enough. Turks, you.
I would say lateral movement. I think that's easier to say. Just for better his defense.
Yeah. Dovetailing off of that, not fouling instead of playing defense. He's blowing by me. I'll just foul him. And we'll restart. It's like a rage quit whenever someone blows by him. Which I kind of respect it. OG Anunoby, GOTUS.
Off the dribble game. Something in between. He's a rookie, and it's going to come regardless, but I think we're going to see it. I think having something between the three and the drive, which he's already pretty good at, but just having something in between and some creation game.
Yeah, fair enough. Turks, you?
I agree. It's hard. He's a rookie, so everything is going to kind of improve his IQ and everything. He shot 37% from three. Maybe try to get to 40 if you can.
Fair enough.
His three shooting.
Mine for OG is finish all of your murder dunks next year, because he could have murdered about 10 more people than he did this season if they just freaking didn't rim out. He had so many almost dunks. So that's my dumb answer for him. Kyle Lowry, GOTUS.
Play longer. I don't know. Like, just play longer into the postseason. I feel like we really got let down just because he was so healthy this year.
Yeah.
And he could have played another month, and they just didn't make it. It sucks.
Yep. Turks?
I agree with that one too. John's getting he gets to go first.
So I'll send
all
it
the
to
obvious
you.
Answers, and here I am trying to not agree.
I mean, I'm going last gooder, and coming
so
up.
Yeah. Okay,
for Kyle Lowry, I think you nailed it. Like, yeah, I guess being healthier, but in a way, he stay healthy. But another one is just kind of, I think he just needs to, like the way he did in game three against the Cavs. He didn't blow a faucet. Like, he needs to stay calm and use that energy against the team he's facing, as opposed to against his own teammates. So maybe a little bit more discipline.
Fair enough. By the way, for the record, I've been going third here, John, and I have been coming up with original answers every time. So no excuse for going second. For me, Kyle, maybe start cooking big men on the bounce again a little bit more. Like, he got a lot of switches with big dudes on him this year, and in the playoffs in particular, I think he did it fine in the regular season, but whether it was just that he doesn't feel confident in blowing past them, because he still can, he just doesn't do it very often, or what, I don't know, but just blow by dudes more often when they're too big and slow to guard you, because you're still very good at getting to the rim and scoring over contact and through traffic, because, I don't know, somehow you avoid blocks better than any six-footer I think I can ever remember, so do that more often. Go to DeMar DeRozan.
More threes and defend off the ball. Please try to defend off the ball.
It's like
stop
fight through a screen.
Kyle Korver.
Fight through a screen, please.
Yeah.
Turco.
Set more screens. I'm going to go with the offensive game.
Right.
I agree with three, and I agree fighting through screens, but you're so good offensively. If you kind of saw the game that Korver and Kevin Love were kind of doing, where they're setting screens for each other, and one of them can hit an open three because of it, I feel like DeMar can add that to his game instead of being just he needs to be on the ball. If you increase your off-ball production, it's going to just space the floor even more.
That's fair.
Yeah, James Harden did it this year.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. He should follow James Harden because he's never going to be as good of a shooter, but if he can get, let's say, 60 to 70% of that shooting ability Harden has, whew.
Yeah.
He is going to be really, really good.
Yeah. Mine for DeMar is, like, channel your best defensive plays into more defense more often, because, holy God, he had so many ridiculous defensive plays in this series. He, like, strip blocked Kevin Love. He switched on to LeBron a few times and just completely shut him down, like, inexplicably. He blocked the shit out of Kyle Korver on a three on the wing. Like, he's got it in him if he wants to. Just channel that into more defensive possessions. Pascal Siakam, GOTUS.
Just a shot.
Yeah.
That's really simple.
Yeah. And I think it's going to come. I really
shot and strength. Add more meat.
Yeah, I hesitate to add too much meat because I like him being the fastest player known to man. But, a little bit of strength would be nice.
He gets beat, man. Kevin Love should not be stronger than you.
Kevin Love is strong, dude. He's good.
I understand, but Siakam plays a position where he needs to be a little bit. He's too weak right now. He needs to be a lot stronger, and obviously his shot. He needs confidence in his shot.
Yeah.
And I'd like him to improve a lot more on that playmaking that he developed this year. That was a nice surprise. It was gone in the playoffs, but get more confident, and I feel like follow Draymond Green. If you see the way his workouts is and what he improved in his game, follow him to a T. You can be that kind of player.
Yeah, I would say work on your left hand a little bit, because that's still shaky, but I'm very high on Siakam, and I think he's going to be really good. Norman Powell, John, Jonas, what do you got?
Oh, man. Come back to us.
Yeah? Turco?
Confidence.
Yeah, stop doing speed before you play every game, perhaps? It's like go in clear-minded and chill. Maybe you have a weed brownie. I don't know.
Stop jumping and passing. That's the worst part.
Oh, it's bad.
Overall, he's just so disappointing this year, which is surprising.
Defense was good as hell this year. It's just his offense became a nothing.
Couldn't hit anything. Yeah. Like, he just didn't believe in himself anymore. He completely vanished. He got his contract extension. He's like, I'm done. Yeah. It doesn't work like that. You need to play better. I was really hoping he was going to follow DeMar's steps and take the same kind of improvement in his game, and he was already better off because he was a better shooter than DeMar was at his age. So, we'll see. We'll see what next year brings.
Let's go Jonas Valanciunas quickly. John Gotis.
I would just be happy to have him run it back, do all the same stuff that he did this year.
Yeah, I would say just continue to, like, with the passing on the short roll and, like, picking cutters out from the post. Like, it was good. It wasn't perfect. Just continue doing that. Turco?
Better defensive awareness when it comes to rim protecting. He showed a really good strength in that in the playoffs, and I'd like to see a lot more of that in the regular season. If he becomes even, like, a 60% version of, I don't know, Andre Drummond or something, like, when it comes to rim protection, that would be really, really good for them.
Fair enough. Lucas Nogueira. Oh, God.
Bye.
Jonas.
He's gone. No point.
I agree he's probably gone, but he can still improve himself.
Of course he can, for another team.
Yeah, but what should he improve is the question. Gotis?
Don't jump on the Kevin Love 3.
Oh, my God. When someone's defending a guy, don't go behind him and bump into your own defender so they can blow by you with a pick and roll. That killed me.
Yeah, war face tattoos.
Oh, there you go.
Jakob Poeltl. Gotis.
Just the wherewithal, just physicality, I feel like. He should be a better rebounder, but he wasn't in the playoffs. Yeah. And I think he just has to be ready for postseason physicality next year, because he really wasn't this year.
Yeah. Turco.
Discipline. Lower your fouling. We talked about this so much, John, on the Overtime podcast. It's just, I mean, you can't control it at this point, but he needs to do a better job of it. If it means becoming more physical, like you're more, I don't know, well-built, and then you won't be able to have to use your hands as much, then fine. That's cool. I like his potential.
I do, too. He's a very good rim protector, in theory. He wasn't in the playoffs, but he is. I would say improve as, like, a lob threat and, like, a finisher on the pick and roll, because, like, he's a dope-ass dunker, and he's a very nice finisher. He brings the ball down too often, and, like, I think he should just finish lobs. Like, that should be his lot in life. And that's obviously a thing he's got to work on. It's got to be a symbiotic thing between him and Kyle or DeMar, but finishing lobs a little more often, being a bigger target in the pick and roll, would be nice. Lorenzo Brown, we can skip. Fred VanVleet, Gotis.
Just be more like Kyle Lowry. Just, like, get the high top and wear hats really low. I don't know. He's really good already. Be taller. I don't know.
More platform shoes to add 2 inches.
You can tell we've reached the point of the show where I've just given up. Like, I think in the history of this show, every time we hit the 80-minute mark, I just give up.
Yeah, you're yeah, you are DeMar DeRozan in game four. Turco?
I mean, if his shoulder injury is actually something that he needs to take care of, I think health is probably the biggest skill that he can kind of develop right now, because it was a dumb injury to begin with. It was not a lack of court awareness over a screen, so I think he just needs to get better at that. But he's showing a lot of good promise. He's literally following Kyle Lowry, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of times where he works himself into a situation where he could jack a pull-up three but doesn't do it just yet. Like, just jack that shit, man. Pull that up. Go
That's
for
what
it.
she said.
Yeah, I agree. That's all. Yeah, for sure. Last one, DeLon Wright, GOTIS.
I would like to see more confidence in the shot just overall.
Because it's like pretty good.
He is pretty good, but he could shoot more of them.
Yeah.
He just the confidence in having that shot where it's like a primary weapon for him, because right now it's kind of like I'm open and I'll shoot it, and
Yeah.
he's really good when that happens, but he could get his attempts up a lot. And yeah, and I feel like just consistency with him too.
That's fair, Turco.
See exhibit Terry Rozier in Boston.
Yeah.
That's what DeLon Wright can be, but taller.
Yeah.
That he has that potential of being so explosive, so good, and he just needs confidence in his game. I feel like, I don't know, maybe he needs the ball in his hands more and be more of a dribbler, but I see him as a better off-ball player anyway. So maybe develop your off-ball screen setting and running through screens and all that kind of stuff, so you can get yourself more open for in building that confidence for that shot.
Yeah, block Kelly Oubre more. That would be nice. And also,
That
yeah,
was...
I think I don't know, I like DeLon's game so much. I think he gets a little hesitant around the basket sometimes, or sometimes in like the 8 to 10 foot range, and he'll like stop his dribble and look for a pass. Like, get a floater. Get a floater, I think, is my thing for DeLon. Because, like, he often kind of picks up his dribble in a weird spot, and it kind of leads to trouble. So find a little game there. Like, study DeMar. Just like find a little 10-foot game that you can kind of use when you get into trouble in traffic, and that I think that would go a long way.
Never lose the Euro step.
No,
So amazing.
just do them for every offensive possession. Just Euro step on everybody, ideally.
So are we going to talk about Malachi Richardson, or is he done?
He didn't play. He's not in the box score here, so I didn't pick him. I'm just reading the box score. Be more
Okay,
like
he's on your
Bruno.
salary for the next 2 years.
Have more milk mustaches, Malachi Richardson. Be more like Bruno. That's gonna do it for this segment. We should come back on the other side. We're already so long into this thing, but hey, it's the funeral podcast. These things are drawn out. We're gonna come back on the other side. We're gonna do our episode sponsor, who I haven't yet picked, and then we will play that random raptors game. It'll be a good time. So stick around. We'll wrap things up in just a second here on the headquarters. Alright, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with John Godis and John Turco, wrapping things up here with your episode sponsor. This week's episode of the headquarters is brought to you by Jamal McGlure. You'll understand the reason why soon. I think he's the only guy from this box score that we haven't done, so I figured we should do it. Jamal McGlure, not the most sterling Raptors career, but he is the strongest and most muscly assistant coach the Raptors have right now, if that's any consolation, and former All-Star as well. In his Raptors career, 34 games, one start, 1.2 points, 3.3 boards, 0.3 blocks. He was not good for the Raptors. He was mostly not good for the last like 6 or 7 years of his career, after being pretty good for the Hornets in the early days. Gotis, do you have any Jamal McGlure memories from his time with the Raptors?
I just remember him being really big. No, I don't have any specific memories of Jamal McGlure, no.
Turco, do you have any of him?
Have more memories of him as a coach than I do as a player. And
That
most of
jacket.
them is working out with Jonas Valanciunas.
Most of them for me are him like wishing a motherfucker would when stuff gets hairy on the court. He's just the guy who's gonna fight somebody, I think, if it ever comes to that. I used to trade for Jamal McGlure all the time in like NBA Live back in the day because I wanted to have a Canadian player because I was a trash boy, and he was good. He was an all-star. An all-star averaging 13.6 points and 10 boards in 2003-04, but an all-star nonetheless. So yeah, that's all I got there. Let's go on to, yeah, he wasn't very memorable. It's fine. It was just a prelude to the real fun here, which is, of course, that random Raptors game. And we're going back. This is a sentimental game because this could be the end of an era. This is Dwayne Casey's first game as Raptors head coach. The Raptors, on December 26, 2011, the first game out of the lockout in 2011, the Raptors played the Cleveland Cavaliers and won 104-96. How fitting. I'm going to cry. This might be the last time the Raptors won at Quicken Loans Arena. They won 104-96 in Cleveland. A Cleveland roster that included Anderson Varejao, Anton Jameson, Kyrie Irving, Anthony Parker, Omri Caspi, Alonzo G, Ramon Sessions, Daniel Gibson, young rookie Tristan Thompson, and Ryan Hollins. This feels like a long-ass time ago, and I guess it kind of is. But yeah, this is 7 years ago. Six years ago.
7 December 2011, right?
Yeah.
It's 2018.
Did Dwayne Casey coach six or seven seasons with the Raptors? I don't know.
This was half a season technically. Yeah.
Well, it was a full season. It was 66 games.
Yeah, close enough.
Like the math of years to years with the stupid league and the not having to set year, I don't know. Is this 7 years for Dwayne Casey? Help me, guys.
How many years has Dwayne Casey coached?
I guess it has been 7 years since it was December 2011. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So yeah, Google seven says seasons. He's 61 years old.
7 seasons. Okay. All right. Anyway, this was Dwayne Casey's first game as Raptors head coach. A win. Of course, his first of almost 300 career wins. I'm gonna start crying. Jamal McGlure played in this game. He came off the bench and scored, played 15 minutes and scored 2 points with 3 boards and 1 assist in 15 minutes, like I said, on 1-of-1 shooting, and was a even for the night. 9 other Raptors played in this game. Turco, since it's your first time on the show, we'll let you go first. Who played in this game for the Raptors? Give me a guess.
Current Cavs member, Jose Calderon.
Jose Calderon is correct. He played 30 minutes, 15 points, 11 assists, 6 boards, plus 12, 5 and 9 shooting, 3 of 5 from deep. Just a vintage Jose Calderon game.
I miss him too.
I kind of like wanted him to just like hit 4 threes on us in the fourth quarter last night. Gotis, over to you.
DeMar.
DeMar DeRozan is correct. He played 25 minutes, 15 points, 7 of 13 from the field, 2 assists, 2 boards, and a plus 14. Team high, plus 14. The opposite of what happened last night. Turco, back over to you.
Sticking with playoff performers, let's go with Amir Johnson of the then Raptors to now Philly.
Yeah, Amir Johnson's correct. This is just the most Amir Johnson game. He played 33 minutes, led the team, 13 points, 13 boards, 3 assists, 1 steal, 3 blocks, 5 of 7 shooting, and a plus 8. Mwah. Gotis, over to you.
Mr. Primo Pasta himself.
Fuck.
I was just going to say him. That's awesome.
That's correct. He played 30 minutes and started. Not at small forward. 13 points, a career high, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 of 12 shooting, and 1 of 4 from deep for a plus 9, which also probably a career high.
Did you just say he was 5 from 12 shooting?
Yeah, which is like a good day for him.
Oh man, that's still bad. Okay.
Yeah. Turco, back over to you. It's 2-2.
Wasn't James Johnson on the team that year?
James Johnson was on the team that year. He played 30.
Yeah, there you go.
I lied and said off the top that he played, that Amir Johnson played the most minutes. James Johnson played the most minutes in this game for the Raptors. He played 36 minutes off the bench.
Wow.
In those 36 minutes, 5 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks, 2 of 4 from the field, 1 of 1 from deep, and a plus 6. Like, flirted almost with a 5x5, which is fucking weird. Okay. That's one of the odder stat lines we've seen on that random Raptors game, I gotta say. It's super bizarre. 3-2, Turco, Gotis, back to you.
Linas Klaza.
That is incorrect. He did not play this team.
Oh.
Turco, back over to you.
Ed Davis.
Boss Davis is correct. He played 17 minutes. Oh, a beautiful game.
I wasn't sure if that was the year he got traded.
This was a bitchin' game from Ed Davis. 17 minutes, 14 points, 7 boards, 2 assists, 2 blocks on 7 of 7 shooting.
Wow.
That is a Ed Davis game and a half. It's 4-2. Gotis, back over to you.
Marcus Banks.
Marcus Banks, a good guess considering he played 11 seasons with the team and played 10 games in that time. No, Marcus Banks not in this game. Turco, back over to you.
2011. Isn't that Terrence Ross's? No, that was 2012. JV. Man, I'm drawing a blank. How about Joey Graham?
Joey Graham is incorrect. I think Joey Graham was in Italy by now.
Ah.
Regrettably. Back over to you, Gotis.
Well, somebody had to play small forward. And it wasn't Bargnani. Sean Marion? No.
Is that your guess?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, that's not right.
It was the other son, Leandro. Oh,
damn it.
Leandro right. Barbosa is correct.
Yes.
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 I believe that clinches the victory for Turco as well with 5 points.
Shocking.
Leandro Barbosa, 22 minutes, 14 points, 4 assists, 5 of 14 shooting, 1 of 3 from deep, and a minus 6. Hey,
thank you. I'll be here till Thursday.
Gotis, you can save face if you want to try to guess the last two. Or Turco, if you want to dunk on John Moore, you can.
I'm not guessing.
Turco, what do you got?
Oh, man, I would have guessed Marion. I knew it was a former son because it seems like we always have a son on a team.
Brian Colangelo, baby!
Who?
Brian Colangelo loves those former sons.
Oh, that's yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wasn't there like... Oh, man, I'm trying to remember. Yeah. It kind of. I think he plays for Philly now. Point guard. No, not McConnell.
You're on. You're almost there.
Kind of fat.
Yeah.
Jared Bayless.
Jared Bayless is correct.
Yes.
He played 17 minutes, 10 points, 3 assists, 1 board, 4 of 8 shooting, 2 or 3 from deep, and a minus 4.
Am I the only one that shows excitement during this game?
No, Dan Grant really loves it too.
Don't worry. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. I've never won, so...
John is so unbelievably bad at this game. It is comical.
I would be, too, if you went, like, further in the past. Because those dark years with being a Raptors fan, I tend to forget who was on the team.
Oh, those are my prime years. All right, there's one more left. You guys wanted me to give it to you. It's kind of sad.
Yeah,
sure.
Rasul Butler.
Oh.
RFP. Oh. Yeah. He started... played 12 minutes.
Started too?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Played 12 minutes, 3 points, 2 assists, 1 board, 1 of 4 shooting. 3 personal fouls, it seems, that he got in foul trouble and James Johnson took over.
So that's why James Johnson played so many minutes. He took Butler's minutes.
Yeah, that does seem to be what happened here. That's very sad. It's Rasul Butler. Good player. Very sad.
I missed the post-LeBron Cleveland Cavaliers.
They were beautiful. Shouts to...
we may see that again this offseason.
Shouts to Samardo Samuels and Manny Harris and all manner of other sad people. We were a manner of sad people on this podcast, but I think we worked our way through it, guys. This was fun. Turco, just a sterling debut from you on the podcast. And I don't know, do you guys have anything you guys want to plug? Gotis, you first, I guess?
Just player reviews coming up on Raptors HQ. This is it for the...
What? Where'd you go?
I mean, unless we do another funeral.
You cut out there. This was it for the what?
Oh, this was it for the pods.
Oh,
so,
right.
Unless we do more funerals.
Yeah. Yeah, this is it for pods for a while. Turco, what about you?
If you are tired of listening to the Raptors, you can always hear my voice again on A League of Our Own podcast. It's an NBA podcast that I host with a couple other guys. No other Johns, so it's not as confusing. But you guys are more than welcome to come join if you want to not talk Raptors for a little bit. And yeah, so that's, you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram. That's at Lou, ALOOShow. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome.
Oh, and I guess, I mean, we should probably do like a draft day pod or something.
We don't have a pick.
Fans would really like that.
We don't have a pick.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. We might trade for one.
I guess. We'll TBD. We'll see.
Yeah, TBD.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, both of you guys. Everyone, this might be the last episode of the headquarters that I host. Not going to lie, doing Lockdown Raptors in this was a challenge this season. And obviously we had like a 5-month hiatus, and I'm glad we could bring it back for the playoffs. But if this is it, this has been so much goddamn fun. I have enjoyed it immensely. It was the first podcast I really started to do, outside of like dinky little ones that had like 3 listeners. This was sort of the first one I did for a larger platform of people. And I felt like we cultivated a pretty cool format and a really just sort of fun feel to the show. And I thank anyone who's ever listened, and I'm getting sad now, but this might be, I'm not entirely certain yet, but considering all the other obligations and stuff, very good chance this is the last one that I do. And thanks so much to anyone who's ever listened and subscribed and rated and reviewed and who has read Raptors HQ and all that stuff. I'm still going to be with HQ doing stuff, but just the podcast is a little too much at this point. But yeah, that's about it. Thanks so much to everyone. And we'll be back with probably a new host, probably GOTUS, if we're being honest. Is that what's happening? Is this what's in the works?
That is definitely TBD. So.
Okay, yeah. Well, there will be a new host at some point. There's a chance I like get fired from Lockdown Raptors or something over the offseason, and this is the only thing I have left to do. But as it stands right now, this will be the last podcast for a while. Maybe we'll do emergency ones in the summer or whatever, but until then, like, we'll see. And then in the regular season, hopefully a new host. If not, we'll see. I the podcast will continue in some form, I'm sure.
Yes.
That at the very least is probably a guarantee, but just yes. Thanks to everyone for listening. It's been a really fun time to do this for 70 some odd episodes, and it's been just one of the more fun things I've done professionally. So just wanted to get that out there, and we'll wrap that thing up now before it gets any more sappy. And so guys, thanks for so much coming on the show. Subscribe, rate, review. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we will talk to you next time on another episode of The Headquarters.